You're not the child you thought you were. You wake up in the night and know you're blind. And yet they keep on pushing, trying inside of your mind. Forever. Resting to control until the emptiness of heaven welcome your weary soul. Welcome to the first ever episode of EcoLogic. I'm Ken Gale.
And I'm David Okuto.
And we'll be here every other Tuesday at 11 a.m. going until Gary Null at noon. And we'll start off this show as we do, as we will every show, with a few announcements.
Yeah, and just as a word of introduction, we would like to thank many people. There has been such a wonderful return of energy and activism over the last number of months, and we have many struggles to continue to refine our work to bring you community service, public affairs, and true culture, Pacific Radio. So we are doing our best, as we hope we can, and we want to thank especially Bernard White for seeing that this show actually did come to the air, and we feel that the mission of the show has a multiple mission, a real broad vision of how to address ecological and environmental justice issues. To start off, as a news item, there's something actually very, very crisis-oriented that I'd like to alert the public to. Top military brass and the U.S. Congress are working on draft legislation at the moment to exempt the military from long-standing environmental laws. In the name of national security, anti-environmental legislation is being tacked on to the Pentagon's annual budget authorization bill. These kinds of add-ons, referred to as riders, truly deserve the distinctive title sleazy riders. The upcoming defense authorization bill is considered must-pass legislation and therefore is a vehicle for such treachery as gutting the Endangered Species Act, the Migratory Bird Treaty, and the Marine Mammal Protection Act. For example, the Navy wants to deploy a low-frequency active sonar system to, quote, detect enemy submarines, unquote. Such high-tech intervention into the marine ecosystem results in huge blasts of sound waves impacting on the delicate auditory structures of whales and dolphins. Sufficient evidence exists to show that this intervention severely harms the inner ear of marine mammals, thereby destroying their natural ability to navigate, resulting in disorientation and death due to beaching. While the Navy labels this as something that they truly need and lobbies for the deployment of such maneuvers, entirely heedless of the impacts on this community of life, this marine community of life. In fact, alternatives exist which permit sonar detection without harming marine mammals. It's unbelievable to realize that appropriate technologies exist, but we continue to have authority figures and leaders who always make the wrong choice. Now, there are improvements in recording technologies and in computer-assisted filtering that provide the basis for what would be called a passive sonar system. Simply put, it would be an enhanced listening of the ocean soundscape without blasting the environment with man-made mega noise. Now, to get involved with this, to let it be known that the American public will not accept this kind of desacralization of the ocean ecology for some boondoggle military maneuver. There is the International Marine Mammal Project, which is run by the Earth Island Institute. They have a website, earthisland.org, www.earthisland.org. Their phone number, I'll let you grab a pencil if you may, 415-788-3666. 415-788-3666. The Earth Island Institute International Marine Mammal Project. We need to contact the Secretary of the Navy. His name is Gordon England. Secretary of the Navy Gordon England at the Pentagon, Washington, D.C., 20350-1000. You can get this information by calling or logging on to the Earth Island Institute, and this is something that we really need a lot of support. Okay, the next item. Speaking of the military and the ecological impacts of militarism, new nuclear weapons are being designed in an attempt to blur the distinction between nuclear and conventional weaponry. The Bush administration is pushing for funding and development of the robust nuclear earth penetrator. You see, they make these phrases, and then they come up with the little easy phrase. They call it the bunker buster. Where do these people, where do these people find these words, and what do they do in their free time to make these words up? They see the bunker buster as no different than a conventional weapon, even though a blast of one of these weapons would blow out a massive crater. Radioactive dust would become raining down, intense and deadly fallout of radioactive dust into the biosphere, which is our lungs. We are symbiotic with this environment, and this is what they are saying are usable nuclear weapons. The Bush administration is, in effect, preparing the public for usable nuclear weapons. When national security, now I'm going to make, this is my commentary on the news, when national security becomes, in reality, unimaginable depraved indifference and reckless disregard for life, health, and the true global security, then it appears we have reached a moment in human history where a concerted challenge must arise. I mean, this, we really have to face what's going on here. We are being asked to invest in financially and emotionally in a narrow logic of fighting terror with terror, ignorant of the causes and conditions which breeds us violence and revenge. We need to attack back at this point, because these people who are in charge are absolutely going insane. To take action, Peace Action of New York City, www.peaceactionnewyorkstate.org. It's a wonderful group of people who are organizing and developing this movement to confront and organize and say enough is enough. We need to disarm, and we need to do it equitably, and we need to do it in such a way that we are caring for our life systems. PeaceActionNewYork.org, 212-870-2304, 212-870-2304. Ken?
Okay, you're listening to Ecologic on WBAI-FM 99.5 in New York City. We have three guests in the studio today. You will probably hear these voices many times over the coming months, and so that's why we're going to bring them to you all at once on our very first show. So introduce yourselves and why you got involved in this.
Good morning, Ken and David, and to everyone that's out there listening. My name is Omar Freya, and I am with an organization called Sustainable South Bronx, located in the Hunts Point section of the South Bronx. And we're really thankful and glad that this is a show that's happening and a real opportunity to get issues about environmental justice, things that you don't hear on mainstream media, out to folks that are out there listening. I'm out here, really, and the work that we've been doing has been one that really addresses the community issues, things of how the environment and humans and people living in cities and people of color and poor people, how we're really affected by the environment and the kinds of policies that state, city, federal agencies have and private companies have taken with respect to our neighborhoods, and how that really affects people and on a day-to-day basis, and the actual things that we live in and breathe, how those things affect our public health, how it affects where we live, where we go to school, how we eat, how we play. There are things that aren't, that are not addressed when we, you know, when we talk about the kind of policies that are established. So it's really great to have a show like this out here on the air, and I'm hopeful that everyone that's out here listening today is going to be tuning in the coming weeks, you know, and months, and continues with the show.
Omar, I'd like to ask you, in your history, you did a number of years working for the New York City Environmental Justice Alliance. That was, I guess, your first organizational experience with the Environmental Justice Alliance?
Well, I was born and raised in the Bronx in New York, and, you know, I've been spent many, many years working on social justice issues. From police brutality, confronting sexism, dealing with issues on class and race, and dealing with issues about the environment was one part of that. And for the past few years, I've been working at a coalition of organizations called the New York City Environmental Justice Alliance, which I'm currently on the board of now. And I'm the organization that I'm currently working for as program director of Sustainable South Bronx. It's an organization that really works to, in a sense, we're grassroots developers. And we see ourselves as being an organization in the South Bronx that's creating the kind of alternatives that we want to see implemented, things that make the South Bronx a greener and healthier place, and not the what's considered basically a poster ghetto of America.
Okay, the coalition you're in, how many different groups are in it? How far do they range?
There are about 14 different community-based organizations that are in the Environmental Justice Alliance that are working all over the city, from Bushwick, Brooklyn, to the South Bronx, Northern Manhattan, to Sunset Park, Brooklyn.
So far it's a New York City-based organization?
Yes, that's a New York City coalition.
Are you involved with some of the coalitions in other parts of the area?
There are coalitions that spring up all the time that deal with a number of different issues. We're, as an organization that's in the South Bronx, you know, we catch all of the, you know, all of the hell that the city is looking to put down the backs or down the throats of communities of color when we're talking about environmental abuses. So right now we're in a fight against a sewage sludge processing plant. We're working in coalition with other groups like the South Bronx Clean Air Coalition. We've got a fight against the city over, you know, the potential for incineration, which is something that the mayor, because of community efforts, has decided is not politically feasible. We'll see what happens next year when it's not an election year. But, you know, these are things that are always ongoing. And it seems like whenever there's some proposal to site some kind of polluting facility that no one else wants, it winds up in places like the South Bronx.
How do people get in touch with your group?
If you want to get in touch with the work, with our organization, the work that we're doing, you can contact me, Omar Freya, at Sustainable South Bronx at 718-617-4668.
Again?
And that's 718-617-4668.
Okay, and go to your next speaker.
Okay, my name is Pika Trenkel, and primarily my work in terms of activism has to do with being an educator. I really feel that where we've gone over the last 20 years in so-called holistic health is farther and farther away from pure natural health, and I think it is just another way that people have been walking down a path of consumerism. So I like to start by saying, you know, if we really look at the timeline of life on this planet, and if we're going to look at, and this has been used before, many people have used this analogy, if we look at all of time of the Earth as one calendar year, human history actually takes only 15 minutes of December 31st at the very end of the year. And of that 15 minutes, 60 seconds is recorded history. So we come out of this entire intelligent, evolving, organized system of life, of diversity. And here we are at this juncture in history feeling that we really are so smart. And we're really not listening to our teacher. There are so many things that have happened, particularly, you know, I think it's important to look at the definitions that we've accepted of health. And if you pick up any rag at the newsstand, any little magazine, it'll say 10 ways to boost your immune system, simple ways to keep yourself healthy. And all of these things are about separating yourself out from that bacterial chaos that's around you, or maybe it's not chaos. The thing is that you have to look at the definition of the word immune. And immune really means not affected or responsive. And as a culture, that's really what we've become. We really have fostered this sense of immunity. We feel that we're exempt from anything to do with the bacterial world. And in effect, you know, that's one thing if we're only talking about the personal health. But all of the byproducts of our use of antibiotics, hormone therapies, vaccinations, denatured foods, processing, all of this destroys our environment as well. So we've reached a point of critical mass where we have more people than we can actually provide for at the rate that we're using resources, and we need to quickly shift our viewpoint. How much plastic, for instance, if you think about those of you interested in natural health, so-called, how much plastic can actually be recycled from all those bottles of pills, from all those bottles of vitamins, from all those bottles of herbs. We have to remember that the plants were here before us, and as such perfect expressions of the earth's intelligence, they offer us also a kind of intelligence if we would but eat them, you know, just at least know them. I've watched students over many years who had no contact with the natural world slowly begin to have this aha experience, just become alive by being part of a larger picture and simplifying their life, not because they were told what they're doing is wrong, but because they had a vision for how a human being really could live. And there are ways of being very ecological within cities. Cities are probably one of the most ecological ways for human beings to live in our time. And we really have to look at the kind of resources we have and begin to look at things, for instance, how we need to shift from this idea that we have to completely be productive all the time, making and doing, but to try to shift that over to allow for more production of our resources, to allow for more intelligent structuring of our environmental resources, looking at our watersheds, looking at areas as if they are food sheds, looking at the herbs that grow spontaneously in our regions as our medicines. And not to always be having to go through a retail store or a wholesale manufacturer to achieve what is really our birthright.
And we'll be dealing with all of these issues in the coming up episodes of Ecologic here on WBAI FM 99.5 in New York City. Faye, what do you do?
Yes, hi, everyone. I want to say that I feel privileged that I'm able to be here with such wonderful guests as Pika and Omar. And I feel privileged also to be able to bring what I have learned to the listening audience. I have been involved with water, in particular drinking water. And I need not remind everyone how important that is. Mm-hmm. I want to pick up on a little phrase that really struck me that David said. And he said that we're symbiotic with the environment. I never thought of it like that before. But yes, everything we breathe, everything we drink, everything we eat is a part of the environment, and of course the waste that we produce become a part of the environment. As Peter said, the plastics, we do have to think about these things. And to go back to where I came from, and this thought that we're symbiotic with the environment, the water issue is so very important, because next to breathing, we can't possibly live without it. And every action that we take affects the water that we drink, because water cleanses everything. I became involved with water as I became aware that there was a possibility of building a filtration plant. A filtration plant sounds like something that we would welcome. However, filtration is not anything that we would consider a good thing because it uses 12 chemicals in the process. And New York's water is definitely one of the best in the world. And it's a fact. And, you know, hopefully in the course of this program, I'm able to bring this out to you that all of the reasons that are given to build a chemical factory for our water is absolutely, totally unnecessary. This factory was supposed to be built in my neighborhood, a minority neighborhood as well. I have been involved with water like most of my life, and it's become a part of me because of my childhood experience of walking on the seaside in the early hours of the morning with my mother. And that place is no more. It used to be covered with wonderful trees. It's now covered with tall buildings. You used to be able to enjoy watching the water on the shore. That is no more. You can't see through the murky water. You'll get tar on your shoes. The activity in the area is noisy and upsetting. And this is what we can expect today if we build a filtration plant, a huge factory with pounding machinery, manufacturing chemicals. And this really is upsetting, and that's why I became involved. Not only was I concerned about what it would do to my neighborhood, but also what it would do to the water. And as I learn more and more about this, it really has become so important for me to bring this fact out to other people and let them know what's happening. And hopefully we can together do something about this.
Is there anybody getting in touch with the group here with to fight this?
Currently, I'm a member of the board of the Croton Watershed Clean Water Coalition.
And Faye, could you give us the colloquial way of saying CWCWC?
Yes, CWCWC is the acronym for the Croton Watershed Clean Water Coalition. And we refer to it as Quack Quack.
Quack Quack.
And they can be reached on the telephone at 212-989-0519, or you can reach them at www.newyorkwater.org.
Repeat those.
www.newyorkwater.org or phone 212-989-0519.
Okay, and let's repeat the names of our guests again, because you know, this is a new show and new folks.
Sure. Omar Freya from Sustainable South Bronx.
Pika Trankel from New Jersey.
And Pika is a natural health ecologist. That is...
Who decided that?
Well, we were discussing this. We said, Pika, what are you? And she got her little cogs turning, and 3 minutes later she says, I know, a natural health ecologist.
I'm also an herbalist and a practicing homeopath, and very involved in long-time advocacy for natural health.
And you're the Jersey rep.
No, I'm Faye Muir, and I'm living in the Bronx, New York. However, the group Croton Watershed Clean Water Coalition is 51 groups strong, and that's from the five boroughs of New York as well as upstate, Westchester, Putnam, Catskills.
And the Croton the Quack Quack actually represents a beautiful model for where we can go as a bioregion. The networking that has been done to connect the city, the suburbs, and the rural areas to actually have this cohesive concern where we are united in our respect for the bioregion, in our dedication to protect the watershed, to create and maintain a natural process ecosystem. And when Faye said factory water, what the managerial and technocratic elite that runs this country, if they have their way, they will give us factory water. And just like factory farming and factory this, factory that, it is a repudiation of our natural rights as human beings and as part of this planet. We deserve much better, and we have to fight for much better. And the Croton Clean Water Coalition has actually built this downstate upstate network that is a model for where we need to go as a bioregion.
And also, you never know who you might meet at one of these meetings. That's how David and I met. I am Ken Gale, formerly of Nuff State here on WBAI-FM, and hopefully we'll be again.
Oh, the future is abundant.
And
I'm David Okuto. This is my initial stint as a producer, as a facilitator. I do not like to think of myself as a host, because if you think ecologically, I mean, what is the host? I mean, we have to worry about the parasites then. So I am a facilitator and a producer, and we hope to really create a forum for community service, community expression, and the meeting of the two worlds. At least there's probably more, but the two worlds of environmental justice and greater ecological concern. And thank you for listening.
I wouldn't call those two worlds at all. I call it all portions of one world.
That's right. You're right.
But anyway, let's take a bit of a what. Yep. Go ahead.
Actually, I was just kind of being moved by Faye's story, just on her fight against on water issues, and I just wanted to tell a little story of my own, just about what's actually happening right now in the South Bronx on the other end of the water spectrum, because we deal with there's a fight that's going on over what happens with the water that's coming into the city and how that's getting purified. There's also a fight that's happening over what's happening with the water that gets flushed down the toilet. And what happens, at the end of the day when, you've got let's just say waste from residences, waste from industries, but waste from a number of different places, and what actually happens to that, and where is that water ultimately going? In the South Bronx, in Hunts Point in particular, there's been a fight for decades, for the past 10 years, over a facility that was cited in the area in what we consider to be blatantly environmentally racist. And that was a company that was at the beginning wave of what's called the pelletization process or movement. Back in the 80s, late 80s, there was a declaration that you could no longer dump in the ocean waters, dump sewage, raw sewage in the ocean waters. So there was a big fight about what to do with things like sewage sludge and what to do with this stuff that typically had been dumped about first 12 miles and then 120 miles off the coast of New York City. Now, there was a big fight about what to do about that, and a company arose called themselves NYAFCO, the New York Organic Fertilizer Company, and their proposal was to site a facility somewhere in the city that would handle sewage sludge from different wastewater treatment plants around the city. It was it went through a process where there was no real environmental review, there was no community input, and it's a story that has been told many, many times in many, many, many different places, wherever there's a community that is seen as a willing or acceptable host. And this was a facility that wound up getting sited in the Hunts Point section of the South Bronx, where I live and where our office is located. And it's a neighborhood that since that time has seen a tremendous rise, explosion in the number of asthma cases, children who are hospitalized with asthma. Starting from a time when that wasn't the case, and people didn't have that kind of history where you would know most of the people that around you had asthma. Now it's certainly a case where you can go into a school, go into a laundromat, and you would see that many of the people would tell you stories about having asthma and living with asthma. And this is a neighborhood that since that time we had the sewage sludge pelletization plant, which is right next door to a wastewater treatment plant, which is also surrounded by about 24 other waste facilities, waste transfer stations, which is also in proximity directly next to the world's largest food distribution center, the Hunts Point Market. So everybody in the city, you realize that all of the food that you're getting at the supermarket, at your restaurants, is passing through a distribution site that is directly next door to sewage sludge processing and waste hauling facilities. And this is something that, you know, most people don't know about, but it's actually happening right now.
When you say all the food, do you mean all the produce?
All of the food, everything? Well, all of the meat that you get and all of your produce. And soon to come, all of your fish. Because the city is also now talking of bringing in the Fulton Fish Market and moving that into the Hunts Point area. But that's an area that receives about 11,000 truck trips every single day. You know, these are trucks coming in and out that are destined for these facilities. And it's a neighborhood that, because of this sewage sludge processing plant, which was supposed to be a high-tech facility and one that would not pollute, it was promised that this was a facility that wouldn't pollute. In actuality, we've seen that not to be the case. There are always emissions coming from the plant, and the neighborhood smells like its final product, which is what they market as fertilizer, which smells nothing like compost. You know, for those of you out there who know what compost smells like, it smells like wet earth, you know, soil, which is, you know, something, a nice smell, you know, after a good rain. But in actuality, what you get is something that no one would ever want, you know, to be sprinkling around their garden or, you know, in their flower pot.
It's a euphemism to have the word organic in the title of this company. And we, again, have to cut through the indoctrination and get to the reality. Now, we're going to take a musical break. And when we come back, we're going to find out what can be happening. It's not merely what we are fighting against. What should we be fighting for in the South Bronx? And maybe we will let you know.
They paved paradise, put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. It paved paradise, put up a parking lot. It took all the trees, put them in a tree museum, and they charged the people a dollar and a half just to see them. Seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. Hey, farmer, put away the DDT now. Give me spots on my apples, or leave me the birds and the bees. Please don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. Late last night, I heard the screen door slam, and a big yellow taxi took away my old man. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? You paved paradise, put up a parking lot. I said, don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot.
Up a parking lot.
Okay, you're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Welcome to the premiere edition of EcoLogic, your radio forum for the expression of ecological thought, analysis, and activist endeavor. We were speaking with Omar Freyel. Can I pronounce
Freya,
it
right? Freya.
Okay. I got to, you know, you just have to keep working. So let me say, Omar, we know that this facility in the Bronx is not what should be there. It's a violation of basic human decency to have something that is not doing the job it's supposed to do, which is to process waste in such a way that it becomes part of the earth that does not poison the neighborhood and the earth. What can you tell us about what the future may hold for the kinds of facilities that are actually possible in terms of waste treatment?
Well, at first, it's really important to understand that whenever you're dealing with problems, and in this case, a waste treatment problem, you're never going to have a magic bullet. There isn't going to be one type of facility or one type of treatment process that really confronts and deals with the entire issue in one shot. It's really, you're going to need a holistic and integrated strategy that deals with a number of different factors. And when we talk about how waste is treated, you know, and this is, you know, for many people who may be listening today, this is like a really just something that no one has ever really thought about. But when you sit back and think about it, we're basically, you know, we're taking our waste, we're diluting it with water, and then we extract all the water at the, you know, at some other location at the end of the day. And first, that's an initial design problem. How do you deal with that, you know, in many places to get rid of the need for so much water, you know, and deal with it in a way that doesn't require as much water? And there are things out there that have been tried in, you know, in rural areas, things like composting toilets, you know, and applying that in some kind of an urban, a city context is something that really, you know, people can put some effort into really studying and seeing what the potentials are. And that may be a radical idea. It is a radical idea for many of the folks, but that are out there, but it's something that, you know, someone should be actually, you know, considering in some places in some kind of context. But for us in the South Bronx, in Hunts Point, when we look at a facility like the New York Organic Fertilizer Company, you know, a very greenwashing kind of name, but when we look at a facility like that and we try to come up with an idea of what the potentials are, what the alternatives are, then it's really more a question. You're talking about what do you do with the actual treatment of the wastewater at the end of the day. And there are a number of opportunities that are out there that have been tried in other places, in places such as Vermont, the M&M Mars company, the chocolate folks. And in a number of other places around the country and across the globe, where people are beginning to look at what can basically be considered an engineered wetland, but would be something on land where you're basically constructing an environment that can treat wastewater, treat sewage. And this is something that isn't currently being done in the city, but it's something that, you know, there's a great potential for. If you've got a piece of land and you've got connection to a waste line, a sewage line, then that's something that can be done, and there's certainly the potential for doing that. You can treat as much as 1 million gallons a day with this type of a facility, and it's something that combines plants, it combines biological microbes, organisms that basically break down waste naturally, and it does not require the chemically intensive system. And a problem, one of the, a contributor, you know, to actual sewage, sludge from the waste treatment plants, wastewater treatment plants across the city are the actual chemicals themselves that are utilized to treat waste. For those, people may be familiar with a large wastewater treatment plant at 145th Street in Manhattan. In Harlem, in West Harlem. It was one that people fought against about 10 years ago, similar to the Nyafco facility. It wound up getting built. It was originally supposed to be on the Upper West Side, but the decision makers that be decided that the Upper West Side would not be an appropriate place for a waste facility. So they decided to move it to a place that was considered an appropriate place for a waste facility, which was Harlem. Now, this was a facility that, as a concession, the state decided that what would happen would be the construction of a park on top of this waste facility. So if anyone's ever been to 145th Street, you go out there to Riverside Drive and you'll see giant smokestacks, and at the bottom of the smokestacks are some astroturf and some playgrounds and a few trees scattered around, and you see tons of kids. The place is packed. In the summertime, you know, you can't move around there, and it's a place that's, you know, one of the few facilities you have where you actually have green open space, which is another environmental justice issue, just the distribution of open space. But that's a facility that processes wastewater, waste, water, across the city. And this is the place where water gets filtered. And, the end product, you've got sewage sludge and you've got water that's re-released back into the environment. That sewage sludge gets sent to the New York Organic Fertilizer Company in Hunts Point, along with wastewater from the highly industrialized Newtown Creek area and a number of other wastewater treatment plants across the city. So these are what we really need to deal with, is how do you treat that sewage sludge and how do you treat the wastewater in and of itself. And something like these ecologically constructed wetlands, you know, in a confined area is one way to really make facilities like the one at 145th Street, the Newtown Creek, the wastewater treatment plant in Hunts Point, it's a way to make them obsolete. And it's something that is being done in other places. And if we're really about being visionary and being progressive and trying new things in New York City, then that's a direction that we really need to be going. The city is right now doing a series of expansion plans in a number of places around the city, in Hunts Point. It's been doing one in Newtown Creek. And this is something that hasn't really been put on the table as something that the city really needs to look at. Especially when we're talking about right now, we're in a drought. And the city has spent quite a bit of money on an ad campaign urging people to not waste water. Well, if we're really about not wasting water, then let's really talk about how we're treating the wastewater that's coming out of the city and really utilize the wastewater in a way where you can actually recollect the water that's being processed and use it for other things, even though there's a claim that it's drinkable, you know, but you can certainly use it for other things that don't require drinking water.
Such as watering
parks, golf courses. But you can water in many places that need water. You can think of all the street trees across the city, you know, we have the largest number of street trees in the region. These trees require water, and there actually are water trucks that go around, you know, some places in the city that I never see them in Hunts Point, but I've heard that they go to the Upper East Side. So certainly we can have some watering, you know, at least in the places that currently aren't getting them now. But there are certainly opportunities to conserve water that aren't being looked at. And
exactly.
This is an immense one. An immense one that, you know, allows for saving money and saving water. And also saving lives. What we're talking about is saving lives, because the facilities that currently exist are not community friendly. They're not friendly to our health. They contaminate the environment. They release heavy metals. They release particulates. They release what are called volatile organic compounds, which are irritants to the respiratory system. They release a number of things that are toxic and hazardous, and that really do not, have been a major factor in the fact that places like the South Bronx and Harlem have one of the highest asthma rates in the city, and one of the highest, six times the national average.
Are you advocating shutting that waste treatment plant down because there's kids playing in the midst of it?
Yes, we are advocating shutting down the facilities that for years have been contaminating the neighborhoods, and really creating facilities that are community friendly, that do not emit these immense amounts of tons, mm-hmm. of pollutants. And these are things that we really need to have happen.
And the Sustainable South Bronx is coordinating these kinds of efforts. People can plug in, and at the end of the show, we'll quickly go over the contacts, but people will be able to engage through something like the Sustainable South Bronx. You will be able to contribute and move the city and our well-being towards these kind of sustainable, appropriate technology solutions. Now, I'd like to ask Pika, the way Omar has struck our minds with all these things that contaminate our daily life, we're in the midst of an actual holocaust, a global holocaust of contamination. While we're in the midst of this contamination, getting towards the world we need to build, how can we take care of ourselves in such a way that we don't contribute to the contamination? If you can maybe speak to that a little, Pika.
Right. Well, I think, firstly, this issue of sanitation is a very important issue. And in fact, if you look at, 100 years or more ago, when all the sewers were being built and all the pathways of water were being built into the cities, there was a great improvement in the health that was related to personal hygiene issues. And so it was a great, wonderful, innovative time of far-reaching visionaries, you know. And I think that we've reached a juncture where we really have to embrace that kind of visionary attitude again, because, as Omar said, you know, the sanitation issue itself has become a polluting issue. And where it started was not that. Where it started was as a great improvement to the health of the population. So we need to look at the health of the population and to educate people to the fact that, for instance, did you know that the highest use of antibiotics in this country is not children with ear infections, but it's our cattle. It's our dairy industry. It's the people, the farmers who are sort of hooked into this whole machinery of agriculture. Well, those antibiotics go into our groundwater. Those antibiotics disrupt the microbial life of our soils. Also, hormones. Again, it's a cattle issue, a chicken issue, but how many women on hormone replacement therapy and birth control pills, all of that estrogen, all of that synthetic estrogen is poured out through the toilets and into the sanitation system, into the groundwater, and is active in the environment in parts per trillion, so that we see sexual deviations in animals in the Arctic who aren't even near sewer lines. That these contaminants into the environment are, we can stop a lot of it on the personal level, you know. And this is part of, you know, when I think about ecology, I think, you know, you can't stop at the border of the skin. You know, what is as important as the diversity in the external ecology is the diversity in the internal ecology. We are asking our children to deal with incredibly complex terrain of chemicals, pollutants. Omar has eloquently, you know, given us a whole array of things that these our children really need to cope with now. But we're stripping them in many ways from their ability to cope. So to look at the immune system more as an interactive system. And I found a quote from a 1928 pharmacotherapeutics book, which I think is really interesting. It's a Dr. Solis Cohen wrote, "Life is a continuous adjustment of internal relations to external relations. Living beings maintain a moving equilibrium in harmony with their changing environment by automatically affecting internal changes to counterbalance external ones. The ability to affect such counterbalancing adjustments promptly and adequately constitutes health." So that's okay if you live in a situation that supports your health. But if the external world is continually increasing the challenges to your ability to adapt, eventually you become weaker. And when you combine that with a diet that is based in refined products and denatured foods, the complexity within the body's ability to adapt and comply, is greatly lowered. So we see, for instance, incredible immune problems in our children, you know, immune diseases in children. This should be a huge alarm to people.
Now, I'd like to interrupt because we are running out of time. We will be revisiting these issues. There is immense hope and immense possibility. We have to also speak of the immense challenges. So we're not being able to fit everything in one program. I'd like Faye, when I think about the water...
Wait a minute. We don't have time for anything other than a wrap-up. So,
okay.
So why don't you...
Yeah.
Give the contact information, Faye. There's 51 groups involved in Quack Quack, so give a phone number so people can get a hold of any of those 51 groups, Westchester and Orange, the whole city.
There's a Westchester number, 914-234-3179. However, we are having a meeting this Thursday, 2 days from now, in White Plains Road in the Bronx, 4101 White Plains Road. At 7 p.m., we're having a guest speaker who will talk about alternatives to a massive factory filtration.
And the phone number of contact for people who are interested is 212-989-0519, and that's the newyorkwater.org. Okay, would you like Omar?
Omar, your group is?
Omar Freya from Sustainable South Bronx. And if you are interested in the fight against the New York Organic Fertilizer Company and any other waste processing facilities in the South Bronx, or are just interested in helping out in our efforts to make the South Bronx a greener place, then give us a call at 718-617-4668.
Okay, so you've been listening to Ecologic, the very first show. We'll be here every 2 weeks. And next week, what's the name of that show? Build a Better Home?
Oh, next week will be Creating Your Healthy Home with Jim Richardson.
And that'll also be 11 to noon. And then stay tuned for Gary Null at noon. And the Arts Magazine is on at 2, and Armand DeMille is between those at 1. So stay tuned here to WBAI-FM 99.5 in New York City. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Dave Occhiuto. Thank you for tuning in.
And we'll go out with some Judah Gorman Jacobs.
I turn from the window to read the papers of madness, new lies, old greed, and another weapon. More frightening than death, when we could cherish the earth and see, cherish the earth and see. Oh, people, people, don't you love this earth? We share with everything that grows. Don't you want to taste freedom, peace in this life? I believe we can make it whole again. I believe we can make it whole. We pass threadbare cities, fiery hopes for this earth, this spinning jewel. I swear that before our time's done, I want to see this old world renewed, see this world renewed. Oh, people, people, don't you love this earth? We share with everything that grows. Don't you want to taste freedom? Make it whole again.
The following is a list of events from the WBAI Community Bulletin Board.
On Saturday, June 22nd at 8 p.m., the Puffin Cultural Forum will present a video premiere, Time Out, Perspectives on New Jersey's Death Penalty, produced by New Jerseyans for a death penalty moratorium and narrated by Susan Sarandon. The Puffin Cultural Forum is located at 20 East Oak Dean Avenue in Teaneck, New Jersey. For more information, call 201-836-8923. That's 201-836-8923.
On Sunday, June 23rd at 1 p.m., the African Poetry Theater, located at 176-03 Jamaica Avenue in Queens, presents Dr. Leonard Jeffries, Jitu Wayusi, Basir Mchawi, Betty Dobson, and Professor Ya Lengi Ngemi in Educators at the Crossroad. For further information, call 718-523-3312. That's 718-523-3312.
On Monday, June 24th, from 6 to 10 p.m., the Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Community Center presents its annual benefit garden party in John A. Saravelli Park at Hudson and Gansevoort Streets in Manhattan. The garden party will feature performers from the world of music, stage, and film, along with samples of local cuisine and a silent auction. All proceeds will benefit center programs. For further information, call 212-620-7310. That's 212-620-7310.
On Sunday, June 30th, there will be an African American Heritage Celebration from noon to 7 p.m. at the Kensico Dam Plaza in Valhalla, New York, with keynote speaker Professor James Small, a historian and African linguist, and live music, dance, drama, art, children's activities, crafts vendors, food, and more. For more information and directions, call 914-378-3283. That's 914-378-3283.
On Wednesday, June 26th at 7:30 p.m., the Inglewood Public Library presents a slide lecture by Dr. A. Alusegun Fayemi on his new book, Voices from Within, Photographs of African Children. The lecture, which will be followed by a book signing, will be in the Inglewood Public Library's McKay Room, located at 31 Engle Street in Inglewood, New Jersey. Seating is limited, so come early. For more information, call 201-568-2215. That's 201-568-2215.
The Harlem Coalition to Fight Gentrification will hold a Harlem March for affordable housing, jobs, and economic development for local small businesses on Saturday, June 29th. The march will start at 1 p.m. at 116th and Lexington Avenue, at 125th Street and Broadway, and at 100th Street and Lexington Avenue, and end at the Harlem State Office Building, where a rally will begin at 2 p.m. For more information, call the Harlem Tenants Council at 212-316-2240. That's 212-316-2240.
Let us know what's going on in your community. Write to us at least 2 weeks in advance at WBAI, 120 Wall Street, 10th floor, New York, New York, 10005. Or fax us at 212-747-1698. That's 212-747-1698.
This WBAI Community Bulletin Board was produced by Evelyn Andino Rosa and Vajra Kilgour, and engineered by Vajra Kilgour and Dred Scott Keys.
Have a great day.